everyone. As we move into this Eastertide season, we begin focusing on the I am saying of Jesus. However, before we do this, we go back to one of the earliest stories of faith, as Moses meets the great I am at the burning bush, reading from Exodus. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place in which you are standing is holy ground." He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey." But Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you, and they ask me, "What is his name?" what shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." He said further, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'I am, has sent me to you.'" Our first I am saying of Jesus that we focus on is Jesus saying, "I am the light of the world," reading from John 8. Again, Jesus spoke to them saying, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Then the Pharisees said to him, "You are testifying on your own behalf. Your testimony is not valid." Jesus answered, "Even if I testify on my own behalf, my testimony is valid, because I know where I have come from and where I am going. But you do not know where I come from or where I am going. You judge by human standards. I judge no one, yet even if I do judge, my judgment is valid. For it is not I alone who judge, but I and the Father who sent me. In your law it is written that the testimony of two witnesses is valid. I testify on my own behalf, and the Father who sent me testifies on my behalf." Then they said to him, "Where is your Father?" Jesus answered, "You know neither me nor my Father. If you knew me, you would know my Father also." He spoke these words while he was teaching in the treasury of the temple. But no one arrested him because his hour had not yet come. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
O Holy One, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be ever and always acceptable unto you. For you are our rock and our Redeemer, our Alpha and our Omega, our beginning and our end, source of our love, and a wellspring of our joys. Amen. Let's begin our reflection this morning. I'm going to invite you to use some of your wonderful imagination. So you're going to imagine that we are at a dinner party, and there is wonderful music wafting through the air. Smell of dinner is tempting your taste buds. You might be dressed a little bit nicer, perhaps, attending the dinner. And you might even have your favorite Christian beverage in your hand. You're mingling with other people, chatting away, talking to others. And as you meet people, you might be inevitably exchanging names. Hi, I'm Scott. I'm Dan. I'm Elizabeth. Chatting away, talking to people, meeting one another. I love these kind of interchanges, don't you? But then there's that inevitable second part that I never know entirely how things will go. After you meet them and you find out your name, the inevitable question is, nice to meet you, Scott, so what do you do? And I always kind of struggle because I know where the question and the answer might go. I often think, well, I'm an NHL hockey player. What do you do for a living? But I know they'll never believe that. Dreams have passed. When I say to them, I'm an ordained Christian minister, I always find that the answer, the responses kind of go in some of these different ways. Sometimes people will proceed to tell you all the things wrong with the church and why they don't attend. Or they will proceed to tell you how guilty they feel for their lapsed involvement. Or they will proceed to tell you the greatest new joke about the rabbi, the pastor, and the priest that I've never heard before. Conversations about identity are exactly what we're going to be getting into in this Eastertide season. Who is Jesus? That is the essence of what the Gospels truly unpack for Christians as we read through these spiritual documents. Who is Jesus? This is the age-old question of Christians as we have tried to find a deep sense of understanding of who Jesus is for us. And as we walk through the season of Eastertide, I would suggest that this is good spiritual work for each of us. And I think we'll find in our journey through this season that the answer for each and every one of us in this room will be unique, and the answer will be evolving for us throughout our life's journey. In Easter, we seek to deepen our relationship with the risen Christ. In the resurrection, God shows up and shows us the transformative power of God's love. Even in the face of darkness, death, and oppression, God shows up and shows us the transforming power of love. We respond. We respond saying, He is risen indeed. That's our response. And what we do in our response is we continue to deeply explore who this Jesus is for us in this season. We explore the Paschal mystery that we celebrate and that we remember at the table every time we have communion. That Christ has died, that Christ has risen, that Christ comes, Christ will come again. And in this season of Eastertide this year, I'd like to bring along with us a unique dialogue partner, I think, a unique dialogue partner of the Gospel of John. The Gospel writer that commemorates his name after Jesus' cousin. And we know that really each and every one of the Gospels are unique. But what's really unique for us is that it's always bugged me that in the three-year cycle, the A, B, and C, so creative, year A, year B, and C, we normally focus on the synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but we don't ever have an exclusive focus on John. So what I wanted to do, if you'd go with me, is for us to just take an exclusive look this year on this Gospel of John. And we know that John, as all the others are, is unique on his own. John is so unique from the very beginning. We think about the birth story that they all have. John's birth story is so profoundly unique. John doesn't really have a birth story with shepherds and donkeys and angels and wise men. John has this ethereal birth story, kind of a cosmic unfolding of God coming in Jesus. The coming in the Greek of the Logos, the beginning of the Word, the birthing of the Word in the very beginning of the first chapter. Kind of realize that we're in for a very unique ride in learning who this Jesus is, and when we open the gospel. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things came into being in Him, and what came into being was life. The life was the light of all the people. And we continue to realize that this this person in Jesus has been around long before his existence that we see in Nazareth. He is almost a pre-existent. His existent cause comes before time and space, and it becomes and shows up and shines so ever brightly in Jesus. We meet the one that John wants to present as being the Messiah, of course, the fulfillment of all of the prophecies in the Hebrew scriptures. We meet this one who is the incarnate Son of God, this living love. But what's so unique, as I was kind of just getting at earlier, is that this Jesus is this pre-existent. He existed before this one that we meet in Jesus of Nazareth. You meet this one who was the Word and was with God and was God. All the way at the very beginning comes and is fully represented and present in Jesus. You realize that this Jesus that we come to meet and is enfleshed in Jesus, he exists across time and space, and he shows up brightly and fully, Jesus. And what scholars suggest is that the ways we truly meet Jesus is through the various I am sayings in the Gospel of John. What I'm talking about are all those I am sayings. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the good shepherd. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the true vine. There's a number of I am sayings, and we're going to entertain those, a few of them, through the various weeks that we have together in Eastertide. And what scholars suggest is that the way that John has woven those, just like a beautiful piece of fabric, the way that those are woven through the tapestry of the gospel allows us to kind of meet this Jesus in deeper and richer and more meaningful ways as we read throughout the gospel. And what's most powerful, I think, for us to realize, what's most powerful, is that these I am sayings are not really just about Jesus saying specifically who he is in his own identity. These I am sayings have roots all the way back to the Jewish lineage, all the way back to when God first revealed God's self in the Exodus story. God's identity is given, as Gwen read in the first reading, as being I am. Here we are early in the story of the Exodus, and Moses is drawn in to see this great bush that is burning and burning but doesn't consume itself. Goes, and then he realizes that he's in holy ground. Removes his sandals. He realizes that this is a holy moment. And he inquires, "Who am I to say that you are?" God says, "I am who I am." And this God, we realize, will be revealed throughout history. This God will be revealed throughout the way God offers deliverance to the people, the way that God offers liberation to the people, the way that God offers hope throughout all of the times. As the pages of history are written and continue to be written, even into the future, this God will continue to reveal God's self to us more and more fully. And what's so deeply powerful for us to realize and to hold with us as we go through these Easter weeks is that in the Greek version of the Old Testament, if we were to read this in Greek, the exact words for I am used in that Exodus passage are the exact ones used for all of the I am sayings in John. What John wants us to realize is that this God, this holy moment that was for Moses, showing up now fully and completely in Jesus. This Jesus is the one that's coming to really be there for the people, not of old, but here today and now. So let's move into the I am saying. Jesus says in the second text that Gwen read, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Now, for the Hebrew people, light always had tremendous depth and meaning. It was the very basis for one of the most significant festivals that they had, the Feast of Tabernacles. We think of the menorahs and all the symbolism that went along with that. symbolism of God's illumination to the people, God's faithfulness to the people. We think of light for the Hebrew people as that first thing, that first essence that God created in the creation story, God separating light from that which was dark. We think about the prophets saying that one day one would come that would be a light all the nations. We read that so often at Christmas, don't we, in Isaiah. We think about the wilderness times, wandering in the darkness of the wilderness, hopefully towards the promised land in that time of darkness, God going before them as a pillar of fire, offering them light as they went forth into the future. Now, the Hebrew people were not unique in seeing light as being very significant for them in their spirituality. It was there also present in various philosophies and various other religions of the day. But for the Hebrew people, what they saw, the people that followed Jesus, what they saw was God's light shining brightest and fullest in this person, in this witness of Jesus. What's interesting, too, of course, is where these stories are placed throughout the gospel, how John tells the story, so what happens right before and then what happens right after. Story right before Jesus saying that he is the light of the world. Story is the judgment of the woman caught in adultery. A challenging story for us to read is a story where a number were gathered around this woman preparing to stone her to death, penalty that was permitted by law at the time. And Jesus said, before any of you pick up the first stone and throw that and kill this woman, let the one without sin pass the first stone. And what he does from that is he kneels down, makes himself vulnerable. He kneels down, takes a stick and starts to play in the mud. All of the people that heard it dropped stones, disperse. We don't really know the end of the story, the fate of this woman entirely. The story is kind of left unresolved, but what John does is John follows up that teaching by explaining how Jesus is the light of the world. Jesus' way is beginning to enlighten people to the new truths. Jesus enlightening people to the grace that God would offer. Jesus enlightening people to the way, to this new way of grace and love and peace. He's unpacking a new reality that God is bringing into the world. Jesus' identity, of course, is given as that which would be light all the way at the very beginning of the birth story, of course, too. We quite often read it around our quiet Christmas service, too, don't we? What has come into being in him was life. And the life was the light of all the people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. In Jesus' world, the world was filled with so much darkness. Roman violence, oppression, crosses hanging with people at all the entrance ways to the cities. Religious control, saying that some were God's beloved children and others not. Jesus sought to enlighten a new way, a new reality, that offered an enlightened consciousness, showing us this way of light that Jesus would offer. Pharisees, the religious leaders of the day, of course, were teaching the consciousness of the day, the awareness of this world. And Jesus was shining a new light, a new way of care, a new way of love, a new way to be light into this darkened world. I have a desk lamp on my study desk at home. It belonged to my paternal grandfather. It's been glued back together I don't know how many times as soccer balls from my son go awry. That lamp helps me see. I wonder what amazing things the light of Christ can help you and I see in the world and in ourselves. Can the light of Christ help us see the pain and the potential in our being? Yes, it can. Can the light of Christ help us see the needs and the suffering in our hurting world? Yes, it can. Can the light of Christ help us see the unfolding of God's kingdom in and through us? Yes, it can. Thanks be to God for this first gift of Eastertide, the light of Christ.